Hello and welcome to another episode of the Side by Side ATC podcast. I'm your host Tom Haynes, and this week I'm going to go over a few things. So we'll let it flow as we go. But I would like to start by saying that this is going to drop on Monday, November 10th, and the Saturday before that, November 8th, it will be 37 years ago on that day that I stepped foot into the academy for the first time as a student, as someone wanting a job in the FAA. And so 37 years ago, a lot has changed in 37 years. And a lot is going to change in the air traffic world during your time. And really, no matter where you are in your air traffic control journey, whether you're, you know, 6 months, a year away from getting to the academy, whether you're at a CTI school, or whether you're at the academy, or whether you're at your first, second, third facility, a lot's going to change. And a lot's going to change over the next few years. And when I got in, you know, when I went to Brownsville to work at that tower, we had no radar. It was a non-radar approach control, so there was no radar to be had. So it was a straight VFR tower, and then the approach controller was working it using non-radar rules. And we had very little equipment in the tower cab. We did have a Fido printer, but we had no monitor for it. So when you were typing in a flight plan, you had no idea where you were if you got stopped. So you had to get pretty good, pretty fast at putting in flight plans. So went from that. They ended up putting a radar in South Texas. We ended up getting D-brights in the tower, but we had no data blocks on them. So, you know, it was an upgrade without being a really large upgrade. By the time I got to Love, we had brights in the tower. We had stars at the time. We had keyboards. An ABC keyboard, which is still what approach controllers use. I still don't understand that one. One of the many things about the tech in air traffic that I just don't understand, and I haven't been able to get anybody to give me a decent answer. Those will be the only ABC keyboards that you use ever, probably. The keyboards in the centers are QWERTY normal keyboards. The number pads in the center on the keyboards are upside down. So I hear a lot of complaining about that on Discord when I get on there. You get used to it. You definitely get used to it. I have gotten to the point where I'm very good with the number pad, either on my computer or working at center. It doesn't matter to me. I can adapt, and you will too. It's difficult when you get to the academy to make that transition. You just have to practice. You have to practice. You have to practice. You have to practice. Okay? That's the only way you're going to get better. They do have a lab that you can practice your keyboard entries. If the number pad is holding you up, get in there as soon as you can and start practicing with it. Like everything else at the academy, you will only get better at it with practice. So, by the time I got to the center, they were still using the host mainframe computers and the dark backup mainframe computer. They were two totally different systems and looked totally different. Dark was very difficult to run any traffic whatsoever on. And when I asked Tech Ops why they were so different, the FAA wanted them that way. They wanted the controllers to know they were on the backup system when they were on the backup system. Yeah, that's a really good idea. Make it where you can't work traffic just so you know it's on a backup system. Yeah, someone in Washington made that decision who had never worked air traffic before. It wasn't the last time, and it won't be the last time. It's going to happen. Get ready for it. So eventually, they did go to ERAM. ERAM, they have, it actually is on servers instead of a mainframe. So that freed up a lot of space downstairs for the tech ops guys. I asked them, I forget what year we actually went to ERAM. Probably in or around 2001, 2003, 2005, somewhere around there. I asked the tech ops guy at the time if that got us into the 21st century. He said no. Because we still had Pentium computers running the sectors. Yeah, look it up. You'll find how bad those were. So there have been upgrades. And then when they upgrade, they don't think it all the way through and truly upgrade it. They've had colored data blocks in TRACONs for decades. TRACONs were able to do silent pointouts to each other for decades. They've just now started doing that in the centers. You can't do it at the academy yet, and there's good reasons for that. But they've started doing silent pointouts at the centers. It's a great thing. Why did it take so long? The colored data blocks. When they came up with ERAM, and initially we had URET, it's now your EDST, but when they first put it in, it was called URET. It's still a tool. The T stands for tool on both of them, I think. But so we started getting these red and yellow and orange alerts on our monitor on the D side. And the company that made them came in to Fort Center one time and sat with us, asked us how we liked it, asked us, you know, ideas that we had to make it better. And I only had one question for them. I mean, I liked it. It was a tool. It was an advanced tool for the time and for what we had had before that. So I thought it was good. But the one question I had for them is, if I have a red alert, these two airplanes over here, how come the data blocks on the radar are not red? So that if I'm working it by myself, I don't have to constantly be looking away from the radar to see the alerts. I can see them on the radar. They looked at me and said, hey, that's a great idea. That was about, I want to say at least 15, maybe 20 years ago. Maybe even longer than that. Still hasn't happened. Okay. So, there are things that you'll get used to being an air traffic controller for a government agency. Things do not change quickly. Things will change staffing wise. Things will change in what gets handed down from management. That will happen quickly. And a lot of times, unfortunately, with the same amount of thought. Which is to say, not a whole lot. There were some great ideas that came through the pipe. Some great ideas that changed the complexion of air traffic from what it was when I got in the late 1980s and into the 90s. There were some changes that needed to happen. And they weren't really technology. They were changes that needed to happen in the attitude, in the way people were trained, and everything like that. The FAA had gone from being probably 90 to 95% ex-military controllers working to, after the strike in 1981, they went to probably 70% civilians. And a lot of those civilians had no experience. And yet they were being trained as if they were military controllers with the same attitude, the same training techniques. And the results were, by the time I got in 1988, the pass rate at the academy was 40%. If you went to a center from the academy, if you passed the academy, if you were one of those 4 in 10 that passed the academy and passed the academy with a high enough score that you went to a center, the pass rate at the centers to get through the training program was 40%. Think about that. All the wasted time, all the wasted money, all the wasted resources. And people were failing. And a lot of people were failing who could do the job. I was blessed to not have to go through that center training until much later, when the people in charge of training started to understand that, hey, we can't train these civilians the same way we've been training these people from the military who had experience also. We can't train people with no experience the same way we train them. Ah. Bright light goes on. So things change, and things continue to change, especially in the training program. The academy has gone from being totally non-radar and totally en route non-radar to being split up. Now, it's split up, tower, en route, TRACON. There were times in the 90s when the FAA Academy was not pass-fail. It was pass-pass. There were parts of the Academy in the early 90s that were pass-pass. Not the en route portion of non-radar, because they were still doing it non-radar. But when I went back to Oklahoma City for terminal radar training, RTF, it was pass-pass. It was up to your facility. I was from a level one tower. I was not looking at the time to, I mean, I was looking, but I was not, I had not been picked up at a higher level facility that had a radar. So I was going because there was a slot open, and I was senior enough that I got the spot. And it was pass. The attitude was totally different. Now, when they went to the, and the FAA hates this word because it's not this anymore, so they say, when the FAA made the screen, which is what it was called when I went through the academy, when they made the screen pass, everybody who went passed. And that's one way to really spike some numbers of controllers into the system. But they don't stay there long. They really, truly do not stay there long. And the FAA did not keep it like that for very long because they understood that air traffic control is not a job that needs to be pass in training. There need to be some training failures. As much as I do believe that with the right amount of work and the right amount of instruction and the right amount of coaching, if you will, the right amount of help, that most students can make it through the academy. But there still need to be, and there always will be, people who get to the academy and start to go through the academy and go, whoa, this is not what I expected, and this is not what I want to do for the rest of my life. And that is a worthy decision. There is nothing wrong with that decision. Nothing that anyone who makes that decision should ever be ashamed of. Because there are people that this job of being an air traffic controller is not for them. And that comes down to the lifestyle that you want to live, the stress that you want to live under, the schedule that you want. And when you're in your 20s, I was in my mid-20s when I hit the academy, and I was single. When I got to my first facility, I was still single. It didn't matter to me what days off I had. I had 2 days off in the middle of the week. That's great. It's cheaper to play golf in the middle of the week than it is on the weekend. But then I got married. And my wife was a teacher. She had weekends off. I had 2 days off in the middle of the week. We didn't have any days off together. Well, that didn't last long. I started working my way towards having weekends off. Because I wanted days off with my wife. And then later on, when we had kids, I wanted days off with my family. And so there are lifestyle choices that have to be made when you're talking about a job where a lot of the facilities are 24/7, 365. Someone has to be there all the time. Okay. When I was at Brownsville, we were open from 6 to midnight. There were times I had enough seniority. There for a while, I was the number one seniority guy. Well, actually, I was number two. But I was able to work, get a schedule that was 8 to 4 Monday through Friday. And that was perfect. I could drop my wife off at school to teach, go to work. I could pick her up after work. And it was wonderful. But the schedule, when you get to a 24-hour facility and you start working the overnight shifts, we call them mids, when you start doing that, your sleep patterns get messed up. You know, it's a weird weird, weird way to live life. It really is. And that's not for everybody. And please understand what that is going to be before you make that trip to Oklahoma City. Now, Oklahoma City, they're going to have day shifts. They're going to have evening shifts. The day shift starts at 7, ends at 3:30. The evening shift starts at 3:30, ends at midnight. And so you're going to get a small taste of it. Right now, they don't have a third shift going overnight. But if they really, truly try to crank up the academy and put a bunch of people through, who knows? They might. I think there was a time, it wasn't while I was there, but I think there was a time when they had some Saturday classes. They didn't go three different shifts, but they had some Saturday classes. Not a huge fan. Either as an instructor, or I wouldn't be a huge fan as a student. But the schedule is what it is. And then, of course, the news right now is government shutdown. Well, I came in late 1988. I went to my first facility in 1989. I got certified later in 1989. The first government shutdown I had to deal with, I think, was 1994 or 1995. And I've dealt with numerous government shutdowns, threats of government shutdowns, almost every year since. And it's only gotten worse in the last few years, in the last, 8 to 10. But that, being a government worker, that's part of it. And so understand, going in, that the only real way to deal with a government shutdown as a government employee is to have, I'd say, about 3 months worth of expenses saved up. So that if you don't see a paycheck, now, this has been the longest one. It's going on 40 days. By the time you listen to this, it will be day 40. They may or may not have reached a deal, be close to reaching a deal. But if you have 3 months worth of expenses saved up, a government shutdown hits you a lot less hard than if you're living paycheck to paycheck. And yes, even those people that are making $200K a year, some of those people are living paycheck to paycheck. Had a discussion with a guy that I work with when he was wanting to go to the center about the same time I was. We're about the same age. He was like, center controllers, they make $52,000 a year. That's $1,000 a week. And he and his friends were like, there's no way you can spend $1,000 a week. Oh, yeah, you can. I could spend $2,000. I can spend almost $3,000 a week, not a month. I can do that. I can do that fairly easily. And I have. And so what you have to do, it's all about being prepared. And I guess this episode is more about trying to make you understand what you're getting into. And it's not all negative. If you can sit there and save up just 3 months of expenses, not 3 months of income, 3 months of expenses, so that you can pay all the bills, you can keep the lights on, you can keep, a roof over your head, you can keep your car, so that you can get to work. You can keep the water on, everything. You can keep food on the table, you can keep your kids in school, whatever your expenses are, 3 months. Save it up. Save it up fast. They're not going to pay you a whole lot while you're at the academy. They're not going to pay you a whole lot when you first get to your first facility. But as soon as they do, start saving up. Save up, please. And then once you've got that, start saving up for retirement. Use the thrift. Please use the thrift. I may do an episode just talking about the numbers of that. And I think I've talked about it before. But do what you have to do. Take some of the stress off. Please take some of the stress off. Do that by being prepared. A lot of what these episodes of this podcast have been about is preparing you for going to Oklahoma City, preparing you for what you're going to experience at the academy, because it's like nothing else. And I guess this episode is more preparing you for what it's going to be like as a controller, because it's like nothing else. About the only people that understand a little bit about the schedule, about, you know, family life with that kind of schedule, are commercial pilots. They do understand. They do understand the main breadwinner being away from home. Weird hours. You know, and like I said, it's part of the job. They have a lesson that they give in basics called fatigue awareness. They have that same exact lesson in the en route radar classroom. They have the same exact lesson in the tower classroom. You will get that lesson twice. Period. And there's a reason. As an air traffic controller, you are going to be tired. You are going to be stressed. It's part of it. And I know. I have done that lesson. When we were going through the radar classroom, we wouldn't spend a whole lot of time on that fatigue awareness. They allot something like 2 hours for it. No. We took maybe 30 minutes. Because I wasn't going to make you sit through a 2-hour lesson that you have already had. And so we would talk about what it's going to be like. And I would answer questions. And, you know, there's a lot of concern out there about what it's going to be like as a controller. It's going to be weird. Unless you've done shift work and rotating shift work. You know, I know a lot of people like that work for FedEx. They work nothing but overnight. That's all they work. That's all they ever work. It's not like they rotate. The normal rotation is 2 evening shifts, 2 day shifts, and an overnight mid shift. And I would work that every week. You're tired for that entire week. I don't care how many hours the FAA says you have to have between shifts. You're going to be tired. That's just the way it is. So, to put a bow on it, yeah, there's a lot of stuff about being a controller. And I know I've been really negative in this episode, so I want to end it on a different note. As negative as I've sounded, and I know I have, I know I've been negative this issue or this episode, but having said all of that, I would still encourage anyone that wants to give this career a shot to give it a shot. As negative as I've been, it is still one of the most amazing careers you could ever get into. It still is. I still get a rush out of working traffic and working it well, knowing that there's only a small group of people who can do what I do. It's a small fraternity that you're trying to get into. The entry is expanding, is opening a little bit wider with the use of CTI schools to get you directly into the FAA instead of going through the academy. It used to be the academy was pretty much it, unless you had prior experience and could get in on one of those bids. It was the academy or prior experience. That was it. Now, at least you have CTIs. You can go to school for 2 years, get a degree, get your CTO, and go in and start working in a tower. It's a lot better. But just understand, there are going to be some things that you're going to have to deal with. You're going to have to deal with people thinking that you're the guy on the ramp holding the batons directing traffic on the ramp. You're going to have to deal with people who think that you get flight benefits and can fly anywhere you want, anytime you want. You're going to have to deal with people who don't understand that you can't be there certain nights of the week. That you can't be at events, that you can't get together with them certain nights of the week because you have to work. Now, the benefits to me totally and completely outweigh the negatives. Like I said, I get a rush out of working traffic and working it well. I didn't come out of the academy as a great controller. I didn't even come out of Brownsville as a great controller. I was pretty good. And I was able to make the jump from a level 1 at the time to a level 4 at Love. And then to make that jump from going from Love going to Fort Worth Center. Now that was a jump. Don't let anyone tell you. Center is a different beast than a tower. They're both air traffic control, but that's about where the similarities stop. But please understand that with all the negatives that I've listed in this episode, I would still do it again. I would still do it again. And I would encourage anyone that feels like they want to go through the gauntlet to become an air traffic controller. I would encourage anyone that wants to do that to do it. Whether you make it or not, it will change you. I am not the same person I was when I was 24 years old, driving up to Oklahoma City from Dallas. I am not that same person. I wasn't that same person when I drove back to Dallas and then on to Brownsville. I wasn't the same person when I left Brownsville and went back to Dallas to work at Love. Being an air traffic controller, trying to be an air traffic controller, trying to go through the academy, trying to go through training, you are going to grow in ways that you can't even imagine until you actually do it. I had no idea what I was in for. And I was blessed to have gotten through. I was blessed. I didn't consider it at the time, but I was blessed to go to Brownsville. I was blessed to have them be contracted out and get to come back to Dallas. That's where my family was. That's where my wife's family was. So, I have been truly blessed by this job. And I guess I just don't know how to say it. But it can bless you. And I am talking to you. Whichever one of you is out there. It can be a blessing to you. It's going to take work. It's going to take a lot of work. But please understand, and I don't know if you've flown on airplanes, if you fly an airplane yourself as a pilot, if you've flown on airplanes as a passenger, understand one thing. Commercial airliners are going between 400 and 600 miles an hour across the ground. I want someone watching those airplanes, controlling those airplanes, telling those pilots what they need to do. I want someone that knows what they're doing. And that is why becoming an air traffic controller is so hard. They cannot just give it to you. You have to earn it. And you can. So, that's, I don't like getting on a soapbox, but that's my soapbox for this week. And if it's your first episode, I'm sorry. I apologize. Listen next week. It'll be better. But thank you guys for listening. Thank you for continuing to listen. Thank you for some of the... man, I've gotten some great texts over the last few weeks. Oh, thank you so much. It's great to hear from people who are listening, whether you're in the United States or wherever in the world you are. I've gotten a couple of those from outside the states. Thank you for listening. And again, don't let the negative things that come with being an air traffic controller, that come with being a government employee, don't let them derail you from reaching your goal. If your goal is to be an air traffic controller, do not let anybody get in your way. But thank you again for listening. And remember, don't try and do this alone. Have someone there, a support group, someone there that you can talk to that can help you. And if you need let me know. I'm here. You can text me, 817-233-8199. Sorry, Niner. You can email me at Tom Haynes, that's TOMHANES, at sidebysideatc.com. If you're interested in the coaching program or the video program, which about half of the radar videos are now available, hopefully the other half of the radar videos will be available by the end of this week, if you're listening to this after Monday. And then we're going to start making the non-radar videos and hopefully have those up in a couple of weeks. But you can get information about those at sidebysideatc.com. But more than anything, if you need help, reach out. I'd love to talk, obviously. But would love to talk about you, talk about where you are, talk about where you can be, and talk about how to get there. So, thank you again. Don't do it alone. And if you need someone to come alongside you, let me know. I'll be here. And until next week, good night.